This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Lots of action on Capitol Hill today. Senate Democrats and a few Republicans propose a flurry of amendments to the Defense Authorization Bill that call for various types of withdrawals of U.S. troops from Iraq. Yesterday, on a visit to Cleveland, President Bush asked for more time.
I believe Congress ought to wait for General Petraeus to come back and give us assessment of the strategy that he's putting in place before they make any decisions.
Meanwhile, the Senate Judiciary Committee heard this morning from Sarah Taylor, former political director to President Bush, about the firings of the U.S. attorneys 2 days after the president invoked executive privilege to prevent her testimony. Add that to Senator Vitter's confession and the meltdown of the McCain campaign. It's a recipe for an extra helping of the political junkie. Republican Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa will join us a bit later in the program. Also, we'll be talking later about the battle between science and desire on the linoleum of the kitchen floor. The 5-second rule. But first, it's an expanded edition of The Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
If you have questions about the politics of Iraq, executive privilege, sex, and the senator, or other political news, the Iowa caucuses are just 6 months away from now. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can email us, talk@npr.org, or weigh in on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. NPR political editor Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A, as usual. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And more Republican senators are backing away from the president on Iraq. Is this the debate that's going to be decisive?
Well, it's certainly happening earlier than the White House expected. We just heard President Bush saying he was hoping that the Senate would wait until September when General Petraeus gave his assessment of what was going on in Iraq. But there are some Republicans who can't wait, obviously mindful of what happened in 2006 regarding the war and the elections and how that could play out in 2008. You have a lot of Republicans, both those who were up in 2008 and those who were not, like Richard Lugar, who said that the current course is not working and things need to be changed.
Mm-hmm. And so I was just going to ask, is this a matter of electoral politics, those up for re-election, or is this a broader movement? We're hearing about as many as 10 Republicans now having questions about the president's policy.
Right, and this is happening in July. Again, a lot of people thought that wouldn't happen until September, but look, the war is still not going well. There's still not good news. I mean, there's the body count, of course, keeps increasing on both sides. And interesting, though, John McCain, who's been a steadfast, not so much a supporter of the war or the conduct of the war, but a supporter of increased troop strength in Iraq. He comes back from Iraq with the same positive view that anything other than success or victory would be far worse.
Senator McCain made that perfectly clear in his remarks yesterday on the Senate floor.
No one can be certain whether this new strategy, which remains in the early stages, can bring about greater stability. We can be sure that should the United States Senate seek to legislate an end to the strategy as it is just beginning, then we will fail for certain.
And interestingly, the political price of this stance couldn't have been more evident. As Senator McCain was speaking, two of his senior campaign aides, he's, of course, running for the Republican nomination for president, two of his senior campaign aides were resigning.
You know, it's interesting. 7 years ago, when John McCain first ran for president, he was opposed to, he opposed George W. Bush, and that hurt him with the Republican rank and file and with voters. And the fact that he's really embraced President Bush on two key issues, the war in Iraq, and the immigration policy, but which is not popular with the Republican base. So now his connection, his closeness to President Bush is what's really hurting him and his chances for the Republican nomination.
And several of the senators who have spoken out against the president's policy have said one of the things that helped change their minds was their visit home over the 4th of July break.
Right, and you also have another full month home with the August break when the Congress will be out and folks will be talking. Then that's why you hear people like Pete Domenici, who's again is up for re-election next year, but you know he's never had really serious problems in winning re-election. But for the first time, he has talked about how a new policy needs to be done. Dick Lugar, who of course was re-elected last year overwhelmingly, they didn't even have a Democratic opponent to him in Indiana, said things are not working. And so when you have George Voinovich, you have Olympia Snowe, who is always opposed signing on to a date certain for American troop pullout. Now she said she's warming to that idea. You have a lot of more and more Republicans not waiting for September, not waiting for the Petraeus report.
But being unhappy with the president's policy, does that necessarily translate into support for any one of these various amendments that are floating around the Senate?
Well, I think Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, is trying to do the best he can to stave off this the collapse of a Republican front. There's now the effort, there's a parliamentary move that the Senate needs to get 60 votes to approve any of these amendments, and there are plenty of amendments in this defense authorization bill. And, of course, you know, while there may be a majority in the Senate for these bills, but there's not the 60 votes that would need to pass it.
And the president gave every indication yesterday in his speech in Cleveland that even should a bill like the one that passed, what was it, in May, if that another one like that reaches his desk, he'll veto it again.
Right, but there'll be more and more Republicans voting to overturn the veto. And, you know, when President Bush said yesterday in Cleveland, he said, well, you know, I would be open to changing, you know, the policy in a while. Well, what does that mean? A lot of people said, well, see, the President Bush is amenable. But others say, well, in a while means nothing. It means it's just putting off the inevitable. And if there's no change in policy, why wait to September? Why wait for more bloodshed? Why not end the war now?
We're talking with NPR political editor Ken Rudin on an expanded version of our Political Junkie segment, which is broadcast every Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's go to Taria, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes, it's Taria.
Taria, calling from Chicago. Please go ahead.
Yes, I am. I just have a concern about that Congress never really asserted its authority on the whole question of the war and whose prerogative it was to declare a war. And that now a lot of the problems we're in seem to be as a result of Congress not having acted then.
The authorization for the president to act was widely accepted by people in both parties, I think, as the equivalent of a declaration of war. And I don't think there's been a declaration of war voted by Congress since December 1941.
Exactly. And I think this is a big problem. as a United States citizen, I think that Congress really should be the one that is deciding, because rather than one person, i.e. the executive, making a decision for the entire nation, you know, you have our elected representatives making that decision.
Well, you can make the argument that just with the Gulf of Tonkin the debate and resolution in 1964 that led to U.S. and bigger involvement in Vietnam, the Senate and the House both voted in October of 2002 to authorize the president to take whatever means necessary to go to war in Iraq. Now, so Congress did give the president the authority. Now, Hillary Clinton and among others are trying to pass a resolution now with this defense authorization bill that would rescind that 2000 vote and have it come up for renewal in 2007. And, of course, Republicans are trying to fight that as well.
That sounds like a very interesting tack.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Here's an email from John in Laramie, Wyoming. When President Bush's escalation of the Iraq War was announced, the talking points were, we'll evaluate in 6 months. Now, 6 months later, the talking points from the administration are shifting to the surge has only just begun. Am I the only one who sees this as a simple waiting game until the presidency is over so that Bush can skate without any admission that his Iraq invasion was and remains a disaster?
Well, the president could be as steadfast in support of his own policy as long as he wants, but he needs the Congress to go along with him. And again, if there are more and more defections from Republicans, as we've seen with Lugar and Domenici and Voinovich and perhaps other Republicans to come, then he's going to be a very lonely President Bush come September 2007.
Let's get Craig on the line. Craig's with us from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I felt like if we had listened to the generals early on in the war and sent all the troops in that we needed, we wouldn't be in the problem we are now. And so my question is, should we listen to the generals now? And two, generals aren't used to accepting any kind of defeat, so can we trust the general's judgment?
Well, I think he's talking about General Eric Shinseki, who before the invasion of Iraq began said you're going to need 300,000 troops, American troops, to keep order in Iraq afterwards. He was then sort of run out of office by then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. And, of course, now we're talking about General David Petraeus. And, Ken, I think what the president would say, Craig, is that when General Petraeus was nominated as in his present position, he was known to be the advocate of this surge policy. He was approved by a vote in the Senate of, I think, 99-0. Certainly, I don't know what the exact number four was. I don't think there were any votes against him. And so, therefore, seen as an endorsement of that policy.
Right. And John McCain said the same thing. He said, from the beginning, if we had listened to the generals, if more troops had been sent in early, as recently as 2004, both John Edwards and Hillary Clinton were talking about more troops sent to Iraq. So that had been a popular position early. But again, given the fact that there has been so many casualties, given the fact that the American public has been led to believe for so long that good news is around the corner when good news has not come around the corner, it's hard to take the word of anybody now whether the war should continue.
And some of the generals are saying, look, there may be a political timetable for Iraq, but there's also a military timetable. They're not necessarily on the same track. And some of the generals talking, we're not going to have a full evaluation of what's been going on until early 2008.
And we'll see if the American voters, starting in Iowa 2008, January of 2008, are willing to wait that long.
And, of course, the intervening event, the election in 2006, which was a decisive change in policy. Thanks very much for the call, Craig. Before we go to the break, Ken Rudin, I did want to there was suspicion yesterday that in his speech in Cleveland that President Bush might say something along the lines of eventually we're going to start drawing down troops in 2008. There was nothing along those lines.
No, the only words he said that a lot of people capitalized on was in a while. We might consider it in a while, and in a while could be a very long time from now. Again, you're exactly right that there's a big difference between military strategy and political strategy.
Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us today. We're talking about action on Capitol Hill. When we come back, we'll look ahead to the U.S. attorney scandal, little black books which have come to light, and take more of your calls. We also hope to be speaking with Iowa Republican Charles Grassley, who will be calling us. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, it's a busy week in the Capitol. We've expanded our political junkie segment to try to cover it all. Ken Rudin is with us. He's NPR's political editor. You can read his weekly column at our website at npr.org. And in a few minutes, Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, will join us. If you have questions about the politics of Iraq, executive privilege, or other political news, 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And while Iraq is going on one side of the Senate, there's also the Senate Judiciary Committee today, Ken Rudin, and the question of executive privilege, a phrase that used to be toxic in American politics.
Well, there are several two specifically White House, former White House aides who the Democratic Congress would love to talk to about the reasons behind the reasoning behind the decisions to fire the 8 or 9 U.S. attorneys. The White House says, no, they do not. They should not talk to Congress. It's executive privilege is what President Bush is claiming. And ultimately, this conflict between Congress and the White House is going to end up in the federal courts.
And it's not just on the question of the fired federal attorneys. There is the question, well, a lot of questions about the run up to the war in Iraq. There's the question about the Scooter Libby commutation.
Right.
There's the FBI's national security letters, those kinds of investigations, and of course the warrantless wiretapping. All of these are looming questions of battles between the democratically controlled Congress and, of course, the Republican controlled
White House.
And
so, in answer to the question that has not been asked yet, but in answer to the question, does it matter which party controls Congress? It sure does, because had the Republicans retained control of Congress in the 2006 elections, these investigations, these subpoenas would not be going on.
And we talked about the political price of Iraq that's being imposed on some Republicans, or at least great concern about it among many Republicans. Democrats, too, are facing some problems. Cindy Sheehan, the peace activist whose son Casey Sheehan was killed in Iraq, a longtime camper outside of President Bush's residence in Texas, well, she has now decided to mount a challenge to Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House.
Well, lots of luck. But Cindy Sheehan says that she's going to march from Crawford to Washington, D.C., expects to get there about July 23rd. And if Nancy Pelosi refuses to bring up impeachment of President Bush, Vice President Cheney, Pelosi said from the beginning that this is off, impeachment is off the table. But if she does not bring impeachment before the Congress by July 23rd, she's going to Cindy Sheehan will mount an independent candidacy against Pelosi at Pelosi's San Francisco district in 2008.
And that may be a quixotic campaign. Nevertheless, there are a lot of Democratic activists who are very upset with members of their own party for failing to hold the president's feet to the fire on Iraq.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, Nancy Pelosi and many Democrats will say, look, we're doing everything we can to end this war sooner than later. And the Sheehan wing of the party says, well, if that's the case, then what are you doing funding this war? Because obviously the war will be funded, when it comes through October 1st. Whatever decision is made on reduction of troops, withdrawal of troops, the war will be funded. And that's unacceptable to Cindy Sheehan and the anti-war left.
Email question from Nick in Chicago. The big story, as far as I'm concerned, is that Ron Paul raked in $400,000 more than Senator McCain in this last quarter. Does this put Ron Paul in third place in the GOP primary?
Well, it doesn't in the polls because Ron Paul is still an asterisk, but it does say something about John McCain, who had been considered the front runner, you know, did very well in 2000, thought to come into 2008 as a front runner. But between Iraq, his position on immigration, his age, the fact that he's raised $25 million in the first 6 months of this year, and he has nothing left, whereas Ron Paul, who has no intention except for just, you know, some appearances in the debate, the fact that Ron Paul has more money on hand than John McCain, I still say it says more about John McCain than it does about Ron Paul.
And joining us now from Capitol Hill is Senator Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa. Senator, I know you're very busy up there. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
I'm always glad to be on NPR.
And I wonder, as you look out and see one more Republican after another on the Senate side taking issue with the president on the issue of Iraq, how big a deal is this?
Well, I think it sends a signal that there's a lot of questions about what's going on in Iraq as part of the war on terror. People forget that we're in Somalia, we're in Philippines, we're in Afghanistan. Everybody thinks the war on terror is only in Iraq. But anyway, it raises questions about it. These are very thoughtful senators, but I think that just because three come forward, it shouldn't preclude the fact that every day you see something on television about Iraq, every day you read something in the paper. Every senator has to be thoughtful and considerate and reviewing what's going on. And it's just a question when you're willing to say something. I myself thought that back in February when I voted for General Petraeus, and he told us he's going to come back in September and report to us, and he was going to report in an unvarnished way. In other words, not varnished by the president, not varnished by the Secretary of Defense. He's going to tell it like it was, that I ought to wait until I get that report. Now, some of my colleagues don't think they ought to wait that long, but that's my feeling.
Well, Senator Domenici was among the people who've been expressing concerns, and he said one of the things that was a factor in his decision was what he was hearing from his constituents when he was back home and that veterans and parents of soldiers serving in Iraq were telling him, look, it's now time to begin ending this thing.
Well, I had 14 town meetings in Iowa last week during the 4th of July recess on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, and I heard that from my constituents, not so much from people that had returned from the conflict over there, but just generally people that are taxpayers, they're informed constituents, they've got opinions. I heard from them, and I gave them the same answer I gave you, that it's always under review, and it'll be under review really in a heavy way when General Petraeus reports. But if I voted for General Petraeus to go over there, and I did, and it passed 81-0, in fact, you know, that's 81-0. Every senator thought he was the person for the job. If we think he's the person for the job, we send him over there to do it. Shouldn't we give him some time to determine if that is? His self-imposed time was about 6 months. He's going to report to us. And if there's progress, I assume he'll continue. If there's not progress, this, and there's Plan B, and there's a Plan B and C around. We don't talk about it because you don't tell the enemies what you're up to, but you don't wait until Plan A fails before you go to Plan B. And so there's a Plan B on the table, depending on what happens between now and September the 15th. But the main thing, we're always talking about the military part of it. Really, our surge is not based upon a military victory. We had our victory in 2003. What we're trying to do is win the peace now, not win the war. And that's based upon the political changes that are going to come over there through the Maliki government, like debathification, like sharing of oil revenue, provincial elections, changing the constitution to bring more Sunnis into the process. And all those things are very important, as well as the diplomatic efforts, a la the Baker Commission report, when we ought to engage Syria and Iraq, or Syria and Iran. And those things are going on now as well. And so the surge is not to get a military victory. It's to bring some peace and quiet so that the political and diplomatic process, a la the Baker Commission, can succeed.
Senator, you talk about the political situation in Iraq. What about the political situation in the United States, given the fact that Iraq is probably the reason why your party is in the minority now? From the 2006 elections, what if Petraeus comes back in September and says, look, we need another year, we need another 2 years? Do you get a sense that the American electorate is willing to wait that long?
I think if General Petraeus would speak to the American people, he might be able to convince them. If President Bush speaks to the American people, reporting on that and doing that, I don't think it'll do any good. But here's the other thing. You bring up the political implications of this, particularly as it would bear on the Republican Party, as an example. But I don't think anybody would think very good of the Republican Party if our president, who's commander-in-chief and who's exercising the number one responsibility of the federal government, the national defense of our people, and the war on terror has something to do with our national defense, not just the war in Iraq, but the whole 25-year war on terror that we've had, if we were going to make a decision not to defend the American people just because it might hurt us politically, we would be not obeying our oath of office to the Constitution.
But isn't that exactly what happened the day after the 2006 elections? President Bush fired Donald Rumsfeld a day after the election. Wouldn't you say there's a connection there?
Wouldn't you say that it was a stupid thing not to do it 6 months before the election?
That's another question, right.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, the Republican campaign that's been most closely aligned with the president in terms of support of the General Petraeus' surge policy is that of John McCain. And he's been having serious difficulties, Senator.
Yeah, but I think they're more related to his sponsorship of the immigration reform bill than it is his support of the war. Now, I understand that fewer Republicans are supporting the president now on his policy in Iraq than there was maybe 6-8 months ago, and so that to that extent it could be hurting McCain. But there still would be majority support among Republicans for what McCain's position is. But boy, 90% of the Republicans were opposed to amnesty and in the immigration issue, and McCain was in the forefront of that issue.
Can you take a call with us?
Yeah, how much time do I have here?
You got it.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, let's get Steve on the line. Steve's calling us from Cleveland, Ohio.
Steve, hi.
How are you? Hi.
How are you?
Go ahead, Steve.
Good. Yes, my main point is, as far as troop reductions go, prior to any of these recent benchmarks that have been set, the General Petraeus situation, it's been, we need to get the Iraqi troop strength up. It's been 4 years now on that. You know, that's my first point. And the second point being, I never hear any mention of George Bush Jr. and his father and their affiliation with Skull and Bones out of Yale, which their whole agenda is to keep the world in a virtual chaos, and that way keep the balance of power off balance, yeah.
Yeah.
I think your first point is well taken. I think the conspiratorial implication of your second question just doesn't hold water, although I'm not an authority on that organization, but I do hear conspiracy theories before, and the only conclusion I can come about a conspiracy theory is that if they're true, then we might as well dig a hole and pull the United States in, and the Constitution doesn't mean anything.
Well, let me just follow up on that first point, though. You raised the questions about the bill, the oil-sharing bill, the debathification. The president is expected to issue a report over this weekend, has to, by the 15th, about progress on that, which is going to be, at best, limited.
Yeah, and it may be very negative. But I think you got to look at it as a preliminary report, one that Congress has demanded, and then I think you've got to look at the compact between the Congress and General Petraeus when we confirmed him that he was going to report directly to us, and he asked for 6 months to give a report, and so we ought to honor his request because we more or less consented to it when we voted 81-0 that he ought to be confirmed.
Senator Grassley, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, joining us from his office on Capitol Hill. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And another, well, fascinating piece of political news this week, Ken Rudin, and that is the confession by Senator David Vitter of Louisiana of an apparent, well, dalliance, is that the right word?
They found Senator Vitter's home phone number on the D.C. Madams list. They was, you know, everybody was scouring Hustler magazine and Larry Flynt, both two paragons of political decency here, are trying to find out who may have been involved in on the D.C. Madam list. Now, look, there's a lot of infidelity in Washington. There's a lot of members of Congress have had affairs, But for David, the thing that's interesting about this story is that David Vitter campaigned on moral issues when he was elected to the Senate in 2004, the first, I should say, first Republican in history of Louisiana to be elected to the Senate. But he campaigned on moral issues, on family values. He criticized Edwin Edwards, the former governor of Louisiana, for his ethical lapses. And so for Vitter, of all people, to find his name on this D.C., I mean, even William Jefferson is embarrassed. No, that's not true. I don't know about that. But the point is that Vitter is again, it's the hypocrisy that has gotten so many people upset about the Vitter revelation.
And interestingly, his campaign, he was elected to the House of Representatives, replacing Robert Livingston, of course, was going to be Speaker of the House in the midst of the Monica Lewinsky thing.
He was also outed by Hustler magazine for having an affair.
Yes.
When Vitter was elected to the Senate in 2004, he said he campaigned on Louisiana values. He may be right.
Here's an email question from Meg in Cincinnati. I'm hearing conflicting stories about the resignation of McCain's staff. Did they resign or did McCain fire them?
Well, both the staffers and McCain all say that there was nobody was fired. There was a disagreement about the way the campaign was run. As I said earlier, the fact that they raised $24, $25 million this year and they had nothing left. John Weaver has been with John McCain from day one. He was Senator McCain's alter ego, and he left in a power fight with somebody else in the campaign. But what I understand is it was not a firing. It was just an amicable parting of the ways.
And let's see if we can squeeze in one last call. Is this Angel or Angel? I'm not being able to read the typing here.
It's Angel.
Angel from Chicago. Quickly.
Yes. I had a question about the subpoenas for the fired U.S. attorneys. You know, I watch a little bit of Law & Order, so I kind of know how subpoenas work. And I just wondered how the executive, you know, office can decide who can be subpoenaed and how they can enforce those.
Yeah, if you're no longer working for the White House, Ken Rudin, how can the president tell you what or what not to say to the Senate Judiciary Committee?
That's exactly what Senator Chuck Schumer said today. The Democrat from New York said, well, it's one thing to have executive privilege to somebody who works in the administration, but both Harriet Myers and
Sarah Taylor
are no longer members. And so that'll be part of the conflict that'll eventually wind up in the courts.
All right. Good question, though, and appreciate the phone call. And Fred Thompson, is he going to get your vote?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm a Democrat.
Okay, well.
Even though I like him.
The Law and Order vote weighing in there. Thanks very much for the call, Angel.
Yeah, Bye.
Coming up, and Ken Rudin, thanks very much for your time, as always.
Thank you, Neil.
The Political Junkie will return next Wednesday on Talk of the Nation. You can read The Political Junkie's column on our website at npr.org. Coming up, hang on to that Pop-Tart. Science says the five-second rule doesn't really work, but most of us know that already and live by a version of that anyway. Why do you use the five-second rule? 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.